The problem with plastics. Plastic waste is a huge problem worldwide. The United Nations estimates that 8 million tons of plastic end up in the world's oceans. You may have seen pictures of the giant garbage patch, plastic islands, larger than entire U.S. states, floating in the Pacific Ocean. Now, microplastics, tiny fragments of plastic, are showing up in every part of the marine food chain and even in humans. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Maine's legislature is tackling plastic waste. Maine has already become the first state in the nation to ban polystyrene, and now lawmakers are considering a ban of single-use plastic bags. If passed, will it make a difference? Are there measures all of us can take to cut down on plastic waste? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Plastic waste of all forms builds up in our environment and even enters our bodies. Today, we'll learn more about what happens to plastics, what can be done to reduce their impact, and what can and cannot be recycled. Joining me in the studio, Matt Grondin, who is Communications Manager at Eco Maine. Hopefully here soon, Laura Minnick-Zitsky, Director of Coastal Birds Project with Maine Audubon. And joining us from our Augusta studio, Sarah Lakeman, Sustainable Maine Project Director with the Natural Resources Council of Maine. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about how to dispose of plastics? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here today on a topic I know is of really high interest to our listeners. And Sarah, I want to talk start with you. You know, unless somebody has been living under a rock and not paying any attention to news, everybody knows that this is a big worldwide problem. We've seen videos of the huge floating garbage islands in the Pacific Ocean. I'm aware that we have what's called microplastics coming into the bloodstreams of marine animals and now maybe even humans. But what's sort of been baffling to people is it seems as though there hasn't been a lot of action taken, and that's changing now. And I want you, Sarah, to bring me up to speed on what's happening in Maine.
Sure. Great. Thank you so much for having me on the show today. Just to start, I think you bring up a really, really good point, is that the problem of plastic pollution and is just becoming so much more apparent in the public. Every time I turn around, you know, there's a new article, a new headline, kind of displaying the gravity of this issue. And in Maine, we are taking action. We just became the first state in the nation to ban polystyrene foam food containers. So that's Styrofoam is the brand name commonly used. And I'm really, really proud of the Maine legislature and citizens for passing that really important law. And this week, I think on Thursday, the House will vote on the LD 1532, which is a bill that would ban the use of plastic shopping bags throughout the state.
We would not be the first state to do that, right?
We would not be the first state to do that. California and New York have both done that, as well as Hawaii. They've passed theirs through a series of countywide ordinances. And Vermont may sign their bill into law before we get to ours. And I also know that Oregon is well on its way. And also Rhode Island and Connecticut are taking this bill under consideration as well.
All right, Matt, I want to go back to the polystyrene bag. This is, what most of us know as styrofoam. For a long time, I think we've known that styrofoam is something that does not biodegrade and cannot be recycled. If styrofoam comes to Eco Maine and other facilities, what happens to it?
Sure. Thanks, Jennifer, for having Eco Maine on the program. So styrofoam, polystyrene, is a problem in recycling facilities, as it is not actually a recyclable commodity in single-stream recycling programs. What can happen to it is it actually can provide a clean source of energy through our waste-to-energy plant, which burns 175,000 tons of trash every year to generate electricity. It's enough electricity to power our plant as well as about 15,000 other homes in the area.
So at Eco Maine, it's incinerated. Many places in Maine, though, do not have an incinerator. Eco Maine serves a number of communities in the greater Portland area. In other places, this goes into landfills, correct?
That is right, yes. Landfilling is the other alternative for things that can't be recovered, like through waste to energy or through recycling.
And what about plastic bags? What happens to them when they come into Eco Maine?
Well, plastic bags we would recommend bringing back to retailers, for example. We're fully supportive of the hopefully passing ban. As we want to reduce, reuse, and recycle before we even get to waste to energy. But since plastic bags, plastic films, bubble wraps aren't recyclable, those also can go to the waste to energy plant to generate electricity.
Yeah, Sarah, this bill, tell me exactly, and I know that it is expected to pass, what kinds of plastic bags does it apply to? I mean, plastic bags are, bread is wrapped in plastic bags. People use plastic bags for dog waste. What are we talking about exactly?
Right. So this bill is explicitly just about plastic shopping bags, the ones that you get at checkout. There are, you know, a list of exemptions in there, mostly to specify what is not a checkout bag. You know, so newspaper bags or bread bags or things like that. Bags used to buy fish. clearly, that's a good use for a plastic bag. It's really for that specific purpose. And another thing about this bill is that it puts a minimum 5-cent fee on paper bags as well. And that's for a couple reasons. One is to encourage the use of reusable bags by having a deterrent to take home a single-use bag. And also to help the retailers and grocers recover the cost of switching to a more durable bag from, you know, those thin, cheap plastic bags.
All right. Joining me on the line now, Curtis Picard. He is the president and Picard. He is the president and CEO of the Retail Association of Maine. Thanks for calling in, Curtis.
No problem. How are you?
Good. I understand that you're in Augusta because of the plastic bag bill. What's the Retail Association's stance on this issue?
Yeah, we're supporting this bill this time around. This has been an issue we've obviously kept an eye on for a number of years. We've watched a number of communities pass different ordinances, and that was really one of the motivations. We started hearing from our local Maine-based retailers that operate in more than one location that said, look, these communities are passing these bills, but they're all a little bit different, and it's getting to be a real challenge to comply. We should take a look at a statewide solution. So for the past year or so, we've been working on that with our leadership, also with the Maine Grocers and Food Producers Association. And then late last year, we reached out to Sarah from the Natural Resources Council of Maine and started talking about a bill that we could all get behind, both the environmental community and the retailers.
Do you, Curtis, I understand that many people believe this will pass. Is this your sense as well?
I think it will pass. Like Sarah said, there's 20-plus communities now that have passed some version of this. Some started with a fee. The more recent ones are a ban, much like LD 1532 is. And we've seen consumers adapt to it as well. So the communities that have passed this, consumers have learned to accommodate it, as have the retailers.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. That's Curtis Picard, the president and CEO for the Retail Association of Maine. Sarah, let's talk broadly. What kind of damage do plastic bags do really here in Maine? You know, I know about the garbage patches in the ocean, but if I have gotten a plastic bag at my local grocery store and I have thrown that into the trash can, it's not ending up in the Pacific Ocean. Where is that going?
Right. So there actually are a lot of problems specific to Maine with these plastic bags. It is adding to the global problem of plastic pollution. But here in Maine, you've seen, say, public works directors coming out in these towns saying, you know what? a lot of these bags are not getting disposed of properly. They're, the nature of the bags themselves causes them to be windblown and swept into the environment. So even when people think they're doing the right thing and putting them in a trash bin, they're not necessarily staying there. And they're you know, the fourth most commonly found litter item. You know, we all see them in trees and lining fences and in litter cleanups in the you know, along the coastline. But they're also washing into clogging our storm drains, and it's a really big, you know, expense and problem for municipalities to clean up these bags just by the nature of them. You know, any of these bags that are washing out to the sea, you know, they sea creatures mistake those for delicious jellyfish, and they gobble them right up. And you know, you hear stories all the time of you know, whales washing up with bellies filled with plastic, so that they, you know, they've basically died of starvation because they can't eat. And to me, these are preventing more of that is extremely important. And I just want to say also that plastic shopping bags are really considered to be the low-hanging fruit of our single-use plastic problem. We've only been using them since the late 1970s. Now they're given out at a rate of about 1 million per minute. I think so the volume of these plastic bags is also a huge problem, too. Matt?
And that's exactly the point, I think, to make, you know, having wind events at landfills or having you know, the plastic bags hanging up in trees, for example, that these ultimately make their way into the environment. And that's, I think, one of the advantages of waste to energy, in that everything is captured inside of one building, including the plastic bags, if they're not able to be recovered, including, you know, the municipal solid waste. This is an option where we can contain all of that inside of one building. We're not having the plastic, you know, leak out into the environment and become an issue in the oceans, for example.
How much, Matt, let me ask you this, though. If, you know, in not even the plastic bags that one might get at the grocery store, but the ones we use for our garbage, you know, most people put a plastic bag in their garbage can.
Sure.
And put the garbage out at the curbside for the truck that comes by, or maybe they go to their local transfer station. That kind of plastic, plastic that's disposed of in other ways, when it is incinerated, what happens to what we're calling microplastic? Is that incinerated as well, or is that going into the atmosphere?
So that's a great question. We actually do recover energy from all sorts of different materials, all sorts of different plastics. And what happens to that is we burn our material that's in the waste to energy facility at a really efficient rate. It's about 2,000 degrees, and so it does a really good job of just totally combusting most materials in that mix. And when that happens, you know, we obviously have lots of different pollution controls. We have everything from you know, to offset acids or offset heavy metals and things like that. But our scrubbers at the end of the day do such a good job that we're talking about 96% of the material coming out of our stack is actually water vapor. So it's a 4%, you know, we're talking about 4% of that is, you know, perhaps particulate matter or, you know, other materials that we don't want. And I would point out that that's, you know, about 90% below the EPA's federal limits.
Sarah, I want to go back to something you said earlier. I'm just curious. You said that plastic bags are the fourth most common kind of waste on the sides of Maine's roads. What are numbers 1, 2, and 3?
Right. So that statistic was taken from a compilation of national data sets of cleanups all over the country. So that's, you know, USA data. And the top three are cigarette butts. They're little. That's the top. That's the number one. A lot of people don't realize that those are plastic. Food packaging and... now you're putting me on the spot here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just curious.
I know. I should have had a list right in front of me. I'm going to refrain from answering that so I don't get it wrong.
That's fine. I'm wondering, though, so plastic bags, and we've established that, you know, these are an issue. And what about the other kinds of plastic? How is that legislated? Is this public education? Is this something that needs to be legislated? Is this working with retailers to cut down on packaging?
Yes, all of the things. I actually, you know, this is actually making a case for environmental policy in general. I think that, you know, we need a cultural shift away from our, you know, throwaway disposable culture. And yes, that needs to come from individuals. But, you know, that's a big role for government and businesses to play. You know, they play a big part in kind of reshaping our culture. And a lot of people just, you know, we need to kind of have some more systemic change with what we're creating, and making sure it has a place to go, that people know where to put it. We really have a lot of missed policy opportunity in regards to waste management. And it's becoming increasingly apparent, you know, as plastic is proliferating in our environment, the rate is showing no sign of going down. So we really do need policies to address that at a large scale. And you know, at the risk of rambling on, there's a policy that I'm really, really excited about that I hope that our legislature will pass next January. It's a bill that would essentially shift who manages and, well, who pays for recycling, let's say, in waste infrastructure in Maine. Right now, it's kind of done, you know, piecemeal through municipal programs. And that's proving to not be terribly resilient in the face of market changes and communities grappling with dealing with collecting and managing all these really hard to manage products. And we need to kind of change the way that we manage that by shifting the costs of recycling programs and waste management more towards the producers and their of these materials, so that we could put the incentives in the right place.
We have a Facebook comment from Martin. Listeners should know that plastic bags can be recycled at many retailers, hundreds of them around Maine. Find yours at plasticfilmrecycling.org. This includes grocery bags, bread bags, case overwrap, dry cleaning bags, newspaper sleeves, ice bags, wood pellet bags, Ziploc, and other resealable bags. And he goes on to list even more. And I want to mention this Facebook post came in before the program, and I looked on this website and plasticfilmrecycling.org, and I saw that Hannaford, Shaw's, Target, Walmart, Lowe's, a lot of the stores that are all over Maine do indeed take plastic bags in. How, I don't know, Matt or Sarah, how successful has that been? How many people know about this and use this service?
I think it's a really successful program. You know, I think we could always do better, but every time, you know, we give tours at Eco Maine, and every time we're talking about the plastic film situation, you know, I would say roughly half of the folks say, oh, yeah, I know, I can take that back to my grocery store. Or the other half, the light bulb goes on and they recognize that receptacle that's kind of in the entryway of their local department store or grocery store. I think it's a really good program. They do take the bags and ultimately turn them into plastic decking lumber. They mix it with sawdust and it turns into this this decking, which is a great solution. You know, to be able to have a solution to a problem like that, I think is a really good thing. We do include plasticfilmrecycling.org in a lot of our education at EcoMaine. And I think, you know, it's one step in the right direction. Ultimately, we do want to reduce and reuse before we talk about recycling, though. So I would encourage reusable shopping bags, as we've talked about here.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. We're talking about plastic waste. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com. By Ako Cisco School, empowering students with learning differences to become confident, independent learners. AkoCiscoSchool.org. And the Maine Association of PAs, committed to expanding access to team-based quality health care across the state. Visit yourpacan.org.
As border agents face a continued surge of legal and illegal immigration, there's also been a crackdown on volunteers who offer aid to migrants.
It is life or death here. A decision to not give somebody food or water could lead to that person dying.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. A rise in people being charged for helping migrants. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
From 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public Television consistently brings us television worth watching, and tonight is no exception. At 8 o'clock this evening, it's Rachel Carson. American Experience. American Experience profiles Rachel Carson, biologist, author, and conservationist, whose book Silent Spring and other writings are credited with advancing the global environmental movement. Carson spent time here in Maine at an oceanside summer home on Southport Island.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, what's being done to reduce the impact of plastics? Joining me, Sarah Lakeman, who's Sustainable Maine Project Director with the Natural Resources Council of Maine, and Matt Grondin, Communications Manager at EcoMaine. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We have an email from Patricia. What about using plastic for food storage? I use glass as much as possible. I use wax paper to wrap sandwiches. Is it safe to store food in plastics that came out before the big BPA scare? And what can we use instead of plastic garbage bags that are so easy to use to help keep things clean? Sadly, most people throw them out before they're even full. So what do we know about, you know, a lot of people have used plasticware, the big brand name being Rubbermaid. Sarah and Matt, is this a question you know the answer to? Is this safe to use?
I would say, go ahead, Sarah.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that what happens when you're in two different studios. So I'll say that, you know, for the policies that we're working on now, we're really focusing on the single-use disposable kind of plastic. You know, I think if you're going to protect your, use to-go containers that are plastic or to save your food at home, I wouldn't microwave those. I think that when you heat those, the plastic containers, if there's hot food in them, the plastic chemicals can potentially leach into your food. So in that way, I would advise using glass.
And I would say, just to add to that too, this is part of the issue, I think, with plastics. You know, plastics probably aren't going away anytime soon. They're a very flexible, very lightweight, very convenient material, and glass is a great option. I've used glass in my containers as well. But it's very prevalent, and I think that in terms of garbage bags just happen to be the most convenient and strongest, most flexible material that we have to throw away our trash, the things that can't be recycled or recovered. And so I don't see that changing anytime soon. And so I think the best way to go forward is to try and minimize and then recover as much as we can from those.
An email from Lynn. I have become disenchanted with the whole idea of recycling. The plastic mess we are in is because manufacturers do not take responsibility for the waste material their products are delivered in. This should not be our problem as consumers. Let's make the corporate world clean up their own mess. Legislation is required. This is what you're talking about, right, Sarah? This is the bill that you'd like to see go through.
Yes, I want her name and contact information, please.
Okay, we're going to go to Dan, who's calling from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. Great topic. One of the things that we as a family struggle with is that we're trying to find alternatives to plastics, like the wax paper milk cartons and things like that. But there are some products out there that we just love, like Stonyfield yogurt, but they just don't seem to be able to find an alternative to the number 6 plastic, and we can't find any outlet for number 6 plastic recycling in our area. So I'm wondering if your guests know of any advances in chemistry or packaging or anything like that that might offer some hope to people who are looking for alternatives to using plastic altogether.
Yeah, Dan, thank you. Matt, I know everybody I know loves yogurt, and it comes in plastic containers at the grocery store. What happens at EcoMaine? Is this incinerated?
Nope. In fact, those are a great source for recycling at EcoMaine. So in EcoMaine communities, the number 6 yogurt containers, as long as it's a rigid plastic container with a number 1 through 7, and the exception is styrofoam. But a rigid number 1 through 7 container can be recycled at EcoMaine. So the 73 member communities that we have can certainly send us their yogurt containers.
Sure. Dan's calling from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. You probably don't know the details of the recycling program there, but there are recycling programs that do, it sounds like, do not accept the number 6.
And that's correct. That is true of some other programs. And if that's the case, you know, it's a hard, it can be a hard material to take advantage of recycling, of course. You know, I think the best way to do that is to get involved with your local solid waste or recycling committee, or if you don't have one, then certainly start one. I would also add there's an effort to kind of among corporate packagers of things like yogurt or ice cream and foods to promote reusable. So it's like the old milk drop off model where you would get your milk bottle on your doorstep. There's a movement afoot now to put, you know, buy yogurt in a container that you would then reuse, return to the manufacturer, and then get your new yogurt in a new new container. So I think that's promising.
Sarah, anything to add?
I do. I think that's just another example of, you know, we need to have systems in place to collect the stuff that's being sold into, you know, into Maine. You know, Matt's right. The member communities of EcoMaine can recycle their 1 through 7 plastics, as well as another single stream facility in Lewiston. But the rest of the state cannot. I've been doing a lot of research into what, you know, what's happened with Maine's recycling programs. And many, many communities only accept plastics number 1 and 2, or maybe only number 2, or maybe not at all. So this is really a problem that's affecting a lot of people in the state. So maybe the answer isn't, you know, not, I'm sorry, Matt, isn't, you know, start a recycling committee and try to start collecting it. Maybe it's, how about we stop selling plastic yogurt containers that are number 6, maybe put it in number 1, and then until we are able to have more collection of number 6, then it can go back to number 6.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, Dan. Joining me on the line now, Susan Faraday. She's Assistant Professor of Marine Affairs at the University of New England in Biddeford. Thanks for joining us, Susan.
You bet. Happy to be part of the conversation.
I understand you study microplastics.
I do. I do. And I come at it from the law and policy bent, which one of your guests mentioned. You've already touched on a lot of these. There's a lot of things that drive change. It's consumer behavior, consumer preference, governmental policy, manufacturer policy, the food industry. There's so many angles by which you can approach this problem. So that's what I've been thinking about lately.
Are there specifically different kinds of microplastics that you study?
No, in terms of the impacts in the marine environment, if it's a little itty-bitty microplastic particle out there, it's very hard to ascertain where it originally came from, because as you've been talking about, the problem with plastic is it just never, ever goes away. It just gets into smaller and smaller pieces. And in terms of the ultimate impacts on the marine environment and human consumers of seafood, I'm not sure it really matters.
Right. So, and this is kind of a new emerging discussion. Do we know what the effects of microplastics are? Are we only just learning what the effects are?
We have so much left to learn, and the research in this area has exploded over the last few years. If you look up our scholarly articles in the literature about microplastics, it's amazing what's happened in the last few years. And at the end of the day, most of the articles conclude with, and there's so much more that we don't know. I mean, we can certainly speculate that having particulates in an organism's, you know, insides, whether it's us or a fish that we like to eat or a whale or a sea turtle, is probably not a good thing. There's a lot we don't know about the long-term impacts of those particles, both in terms of being an object that's inside, but also if there's any pollutants that are glomming onto those particles or the actual makeup of those microplastics, you know, the chemicals that went into producing the plastic in the first place.
And Susan,
so there's really a lot we don't know.
And my understanding is we're talking about marine life, but we're talking about more than that because these microplastics are being found in humans, correct?
Oh, yeah. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. I think, you know, the microplastic particle issue in the ocean and marine life is huge. It's something I'm very concerned about because I'm in the marine realm. But if you just pause and look around your kitchen or look around the grocery store, you know, plastic packaging is around us everywhere. The chance that microplastics are not present in all of our other terrestrial foods and surroundings, it's impossible. So I think it's great in terms of raising awareness to talk about microplastics in seafood, but it is a much bigger problem, which you and your guests have already been talking about. So,
well, Susan, thanks so much for joining us. That's Susan Faraday. She is Assistant Professor of Marine Affairs at the University of New England in Biddeford. Thanks for joining us. We'll go to Jim, who's calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hey. Hi, Jennifer.
Sure, go ahead. Yep.
Hi. Yeah, quick question. We live in a state that used to produce massive amounts of paper and paper products. And I'm wondering what it's going to take for, in terms of inventiveness, things that are already out there for paper wrapping, packaging, what have you, to really compete with plastic. Because I'm guessing it's more expensive now than plastic containers, bags, etc. Is there any chance that we could have a resurgence if we learned how to make stuff that people, that's not recyclable, but it's biodegradable?
Sure, Jim. And just last week, we did a Maine Calling program on the emerging bioeconomy in Maine and the kind of research that's being done on creating products as an alternative to those made from petroleum. Sarah, is there anything you'd like to say to Jim?
Sure. So I think, again, I can always go back to kind of changing the way we're managing our waste and who pays for it. So let's say if we had that type of policy where the producers of materials had to pay for our recycling programs. Let's say they pay into that system based on how much it costs to manage that. If managing plastic is becoming really expensive, it's not worth as much as paper or something like that, then they pay more. And it basically would put the incentives, the price signals in the right way that would encourage the use of materials that were more recoverable and more valuable to be recovered. So that's, for me, it always just kind of goes back to that kind of solution.
Jim, thanks for your call. Let's see, we're going to go now to Swetha Palaniapan, who is calling. She's a sophomore at Cape Elizabeth High School. Thanks for calling in, Swetha.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So I understand you just did some research looking at microbeads. Tell me about your research.
Yes, so I actually did a project on microplastics for the Maine State Science Fair. And it all really started off with I was kind of looking through articles and actually came across this one article, a National Geographic article that said microplastics were being found in human stool samples. So that really got me thinking, like, what are other places that microplastics are found? And actually came across this other article that said they found microplastics inside a fish's brain. So then I started thinking, well, Maine, especially in southern Maine, we have such a big seafood industry, especially with lobstering and fishing. So I wanted to see how many microplastics were on southern Maine's coast. So what I did was I went to 15 different beaches, and I collected two samples from each beach. And then after I collected all my samples, I went to a lab, and I used a flow cytometry machine, which is basically a cell counter. And I manipulated the cell counter to count the number of microplastics. And based on that, I ordered which had the most, which beach had the most, and which beach had the least.
So what did you find? Where were there the most microplastics of the beaches you sampled?
So the place that actually had the most was Bug Light Park. And I collected near the lighthouse. And there was actually 1,106 pieces of plastic in just 1 milliliter of the sample.
Wow. Do you feel people your age, Swetha, are aware of the problems that plastics cause?
I think some are, but I think there's the mentality that if we can't see them, then they're not a problem. Because these microplastics are really small, and sometimes it's hard to see how big the effect is if we can't actually see it. Because when I was collecting, I was like expecting to not see that many because you don't see very often plastic bottles floating. You do see that, but not as often. And I wasn't really expecting that. But then when you actually look at the microscopic pieces, there's so many out there that we're sometimes just not aware of how many there actually are.
Well, Swetha, congratulations, and thanks so much for joining us. That's Swetha Palaniapan. She is a sophomore at Cape Elizabeth High School. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Lunder Foundation, in support of the Colby College Museum of Art, always free and open to all. And Sweet Dreams in Brunswick, furnishing the homes of Maine families with American-made and Amish-crafted home furnishings for over 20 years. SweetDreamsFurniture.com.
On the next Fresh Air, helping your kids survive and thrive in their college years. We talk with psychologist B. Janet Hibbs and psychiatrist Anthony Rostain about the challenges of parenting one of the most stressed-out generations of teens. Hibbs helped her son navigate his way through severe depression and anxiety. Their book is called The Stressed Years of Their Lives. Join us.
Coming up tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Predators are after the money of older people.
I realize she's not been sending him hundreds of dollars. She's been sending him tens of thousands of dollars.
From romance scams to sleazy investment offers to fake computer support.
I can't imagine what I was thinking. I was like a robot.
We're digging into this in a special from Marketplace called Brains and Losses, the bottom line on aging and financial vulnerability, coming soon.
Coming up shortly after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program Plastic Waste. Joining me, Matt Grondin with Eco Maine and Sarah Lakeman with the Natural Resources Council of Maine. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now, Laura Minnick-Zitsky, who is director of the Coastal Birds Project with Maine Audubon. Hi, Laura, and tell me what you have seen about the effects of plastic on wildlife.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I have to say, a lot of my experience with observing plastics on wildlife was working in the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, and seabirds typically accumulate a lot of plastic because plastic floats, and a lot of it is designed to float in terms of fishing gear. And then seabirds accidentally pick it up, feed it to their chicks, as it can be easily confused with other wildlife. So I have seen, you know, albatross chicks die of starvation as their stomachs get full of plastic and so that they can't eat real food. So that's definitely the most dramatic example I can think of.
What is Audubon and what are those who care about birds doing about this in Maine?
Well, there's certainly lots of little things that we can all do. And I know that there's, certain pieces of legislation that are at the state level, like trying to ban plastic bags, for example, that we can do to help. But I think one little thing that we all can do, besides, of course, trying to reduce our own plastic use, is just cleaning up plastic we see. I work on our beaches quite a lot, and there's always plastic on the beach, and I'm always pleased when I see people picking up waste that even other people have left behind. It's a little thing that can make a big difference.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. That's Laura Minnick-Zitsky. She is with Audubon. I'm going to go to a Facebook comment from Anne. When I go to my grocery store with bags for groceries and even produce, I find so many things packed in plastic. My town only recycles 1 and 2 plastic. What can I do with everything else? Sarah, until somebody changes policy, what do you recommend for those people who can't recycle their plastic, don't know what to do?
Well, unfortunately, they're just going to have to put those that unrecyclable plastic in their garbage bins, and I don't like that answer at all. So I think that if people are feeling powerless, they should, you know, if they feel like they want to buy a product and they can't avoid the packaging that comes with it, and contact the manufacturer of that product and say, you know, I really like this, but I don't like, you know, what it's packaged in. I think the more people that can do that, talk to your retail establishment, the more people that speak up, the more likely we're going to be able to get some more systemic change going with that. So,
okay, we'll
for
go
better
to,
or worse, that's my answer.
Sure, we'll go to Laura from South Portland. Hi, Laura, go ahead.
Hi, I am in the process of opening a plastic-free refill shop here in South Portland. And how that will work is customers can bring their own containers from home, from containers that they already have, and refill products, all natural products for home and body. It's just one way that people can do the refusal part of the reduce, reuse, recycle.
Oh, interesting idea. When is your store going to be open?
We'll be open midsummer.
And what's its name going to be?
It's called Go-Go Refill.
All right. Well, thanks, Laura. Is this something that's happening in other parts of the country? Is that how you got the idea?
Yeah, exactly. I've been just trying to reduce plastic for my family for the past couple of years and did some research and found out that this is happening across the, a little bit in the U.S., more so in Europe and Canada.
All right. Well, thank you and good luck to you. We're going to go to Brian, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I volunteer with the Surfrider Foundation, the main chapter here. And it's just a small step, but one thing that restaurants and food retailers in Maine can do to kind of do their part is join the Surfrider program, the Surfrider Foundation's Ocean Friendly Restaurant program. So what we have is we have five criteria in order to reduce single-use plastics, which they have to abide by. And then they choose two additional kind of above and beyond criteria. And we recognize them on our app, and people can search for ocean-friendly restaurants that way and support those businesses.
Great. And what is the website or app that somebody can find that information?
So if you just search for Surfrider ocean-friendly restaurants, anyone looking to register their business can do so on Surfrider's website, and you can find a map of that by just Googling or searching for that as well, the ocean-friendly restaurants.
Great. Thanks, Brian, for calling in. We have a tweet from Nissa. I have switched most of the one-time use plastics in my business with @BioDogBags, who make a variety of products from corn in the U.S. It is even compostable in your backyard compost pile. Matt, are you familiar with this?
Not that particular product, but certainly that's a great alternative, biodegradable and compostable materials. Like I keep saying, we're subscribing to the waste hierarchy, which is reduce, reuse, recycle, and then compost. So composting or digesting something, a material that would otherwise be thrown away, is a fantastic alternative that we would love to see more of.
All right. We'll go to David, who's calling from Winterport. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just wondering, are prescription bottles recyclable?
Prescription bottles in EcoMaine communities are recyclable. As I mentioned earlier, I think any rigid plastic container, a hard plastic container, number 1 through 7, and prescription bottles certainly apply, are recyclable in EcoMaine communities. Now, Winterport is not one, but certainly I would advise checking in with either the Maine Resource Recovery Association or perhaps Coastal Resources of Maine up in the Hamden-Bangor area as well.
All right. Thanks, David. We have a short email from Craig. You mentioned the garbage patch in the ocean. That patch in the Pacific is now an island twice the size of Texas. Going to Chris calling from Portland. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. Chris, are you there? Hello. Okay, we'll go to Jimmy calling from Hollis. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, good afternoon. I've been a door-to-door milkman since 1977. We started with glass bottles and went to all plastic, and now it's 90% glass again. All I do all of Southern Maine. We're doing all the reusables. We're doing yogurts now. We're going to do coffee in a reusable bag. We do the egg cartons. People redo the egg cartons. And we're probably, I have so much business, I had to put on an extra day. I'm working 6 days a week, and it's all because of what's going on with the plastics. I've never seen anything like it in my 43 years of delivering dairy products.
So you find that your customers really care.
Oh, you know, I'm going to tell you something. There are people that leave me out an envelope and say, Jimmy, can you please leave the envelope back because I want to reuse the envelope again. I mean, these are real recycled. Maine is special people, and I've only been in Maine for about 6 years, but started out in Southern California. But the glass bottles were everywhere when I started in the late 70s, and it went to plastic because it was convenient. But now it's all glass, reusable. We're talking to so many different companies that want to do reusable products, and just think about it: how many things you can reuse right at your doorstep. Just like the old days.
Jimmy, tell me again the company you work for.
It's my own company. It's Jimmy Milkman, jimmymilkman.com.
Well, thank
you. I'm
looking
for anybody who would like to do it. I've got so much business, I can't keep up with it.
So you need to hire, it sounds like.
I'd like somebody else to have. I'm about ready to retire. I'm 63 years old. They're wearing me out.
Oh, well, I really appreciate you calling in, Jimmy. It's nice to hear from you. Thank you. We're going to go to Rebecca calling from St. Joseph's College. Hi, Rebecca. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm a student at St. Joseph's, and I'm doing a summer research project on Sebago Lake microplastics.
Tell me what you're finding out.
So right now we're doing preliminary methodology of comparing different ways to find them in freshwater, since it's not really something that it's super already studied. So I'm using an app called Anik Data, which is a citizen science app, and I am using 1 liter bottle samples and filtering through, and I'm finding about there's a wide range, but it's mostly fibers.
Oh, interesting. Rebecca, what do you hope to be able to discern by the end of your project?
So there are other research projects that do find fresh microplastics in freshwater, but I hope to determine some kind of quantitative way of what I find in Sebago Lake.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling, Rebecca, and good luck with your project.
Thank you.
We have a Facebook post from Linda. The best yogurt in Maine is from our local farmers, and it comes in returnable glass jars. My favorite is Milk House Whole Milk Yogurt. It is even sold at some Hannaford's. Another Facebook message from Celia. What about the new silicone containers? Are Matt or Sarah, either of you familiar with those?
I'm not. I hope Matt can answer that.
Yeah. No, not as such. I know there's a company called Loop that's making some reusable packaging that I mentioned earlier, but I believe those are primarily made out of metal, actually.
Okay. A tweet from Jim. Why are we not turning our bags into diesel? Is that something that's been researched? Do we know, Sarah?
I am not familiar with that solution for plastic bags.
Okay, we'll go to Gordon calling from Arundel. Hi, Gordon. Go ahead.
How are you doing? Yeah, I've been listening to this, and I've been concerned as an adult my entire life. But I live near Kennebunk, which has recently outlawed, plastic bags, except for in the produce department, those flimsy ones that are totally non-recyclable. My daughter has started a small company doing reusable produce bags, and she's having a really good response from, like, organic food markets. And, she's supplied two stores statewide now. And, they're reusable, washable, because that plastic, I mean, the average family goes through, we figured, close to 300 of those bags a year, conservatively, and they're not recyclable. So
Gordon, tell me about the reusable bags your daughter has made. What are those made out of?
They're made of unbleached muslin and with a hemp cord, and they weigh, I think, less than 1/8, one-tenth of an ounce. So they don't add to the cost of the produce, and they'll last forever.
Is this something that consumers take into the stores with them, or that she's marketing to the stores?
Well, she's selling to consumers at, you know, like farmers markets and craft fairs. And she's actually selling to stores in Maine. She's got two stores. She's talking with Hannaford's right now about doing, you know, doing bags for them.
Well, Gordon, so thanks for calling. And I invite you to go on to our Maine Calling Facebook, that today's post, and add a comment with information about your daughter's company. Matt?
And I want to echo this. I think I was thinking this when Jimmy from Hollis called in as well, Gordon, that, you know, there have been studies that show overwhelmingly time after time that people want to reuse, want to reduce, want to recycle, even will, you know, pay a slight premium to do so. So I think, you know, we need to continue that trajectory, and the more options that are out there, the better, I think. And that's just another great story, I think.
Thanks, Gordon. We have a Facebook comment from Liz. Just wanted to put in a plug for non-plastic cosmetic and dental products. I've written to my own dentist to stop giving out plastic toothbrushes, floss dispensers, and plastic tubes of toothpaste. Try bamboo and glass floss holders with refills. There are also great alternatives to toothpaste tubes. If we could get dentists into non-plastic alternatives, it could introduce people as a great way to minimize plastics. And let's see, a Facebook post from Jeremy. The bills, I guess he's talking about the bills in the state legislature, would certainly boost our wood products industry. And a short email: can someone explain what plastic containers can be recycled and which should go in the trash? And Matt, that really depends where you live, doesn't it?
It all depends on where you live, honestly. And you know, At EcoMaine, in our program, rigid plastic containers number 1 through 7. Those are, you know, yogurt containers, water and soda bottles, milk jugs, laundry detergent bottles, you know, anything like a 5-gallon pail. We try and keep EcoMaine, our recycling program, as open and accessible as possible. And you know, the mixed plastics that we see some communities not accepting, you know, that's something that we're really still willing to take, and you know, we're still seeing good movement on those plastics and good pricing, but they are harder plastic to recycle.
All right, and Sarah, very quickly, when do we expect Maine's proposed plastic bag ban bill on the to come up for a vote in Augusta?
So Thursday, the House is expected to vote on the bill, which means that the Senate would then vote on Tuesday next week, likely. And then the governor would have 10 days to decide to sign it or not.
Okay, great.
I
need to wrap up. Thanks so much. That's okay. Sarah Lakeman, Sustainable Maine Project Director with Natural Resources Council of Maine, and Matt Grondin, Communications Manager at EcoMaine, also here with us in the studio today. Sandra Harris ran the board today. Olivia Peruk took your calls. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.